The host of America's favorite quiz show has passed away. We're going to talk about it on this episode of What is WAER's Top Rated Podcast.
Digital content on WAER is made possible thanks to California Closets, creating functional home offices for those working and learning remotely, offering in-home and virtual consultations. Learn more at californiaclosets.com.
Welcome to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee. For over 30 years, Alex Trebek appeared in the living rooms of millions of Americans, challenging our knowledge on everything from American history to pop music to Shakespeare on the quiz show Jeopardy.
Which of these three players gets to come back in 3 days to play for $250,000? They're dealing with famous phrases and this clue. In the title of a groundbreaking 1890 expose of poverty in New York City slums, these three words follow: how the. 30 seconds. Good luck.
Trebek's final answer came on November 8th. He was 80 years old. Here to talk about what the legendary quiz show host meant to American popular culture is Claire McNear, author of the newly released book, Answers in the Form of Questions, A Definitive Guide to Jeopardy. Claire, welcome to Pop Life.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad you could be here. Obviously, with the passing of Alex Trebek, I thought it'd be a good opportunity to get with someone to talk about Trebek, the show, what he's meant to American popular culture and entertainment in America. And couldn't think of a better person, someone who has recently written a book. It's called Answers in the Form of Questions, A Definitive History and Insider's Guide to Jeopardy. By Claire McNear. So tell us a little bit about how you came to write this book.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it is profoundly bittersweet timing with the book coming out last week. But I was able to speak with Trebek a bit in the course of writing it, and it has been obviously a profound pleasure to get to just talk about him over the last week. But I am a staff writer at The Ringer, where I cover a mix of sports and culture, and I like to joke that Jeopardy is the perfect collision of those two things, where it is a TV show that I at least would argue is very much a sport. So it became something that I first started writing about very occasionally 2 or 3 years ago, and gradually that reporting just started to expand, and I got to know more people in that world, and now somehow it has become a whole book.
Well, I got to say, in reading a good bit of it, you really draw people in with the way you write, and you know, sort of painting a picture of what's going on, the way you describe folks sort of in the contestants in the waiting room, sort of what they're going through as they wait to perform. It's a really good insider's look at this thing, and I find it to be very compelling. So I'm really looking forward to talking more about it. In the book you write, in order to sort of understand Jeopardy, you have to understand Charles Van Doren. And it's a story that's been sort of well-documented recently in American cinema. But for those that aren't familiar, remind us of why Charles Van Doren and that situation helps to shape and form Jeopardy.
Yeah, of course. It really kind of is such a central part of Jeopardy's story. So for anybody who's seen the movie Quiz Show, this will be somewhat familiar. But in the 1950s, there was a series of scandals amongst these quiz shows, including one called 21, which had featured a player named Charles Van Doren. And basically what was happening was quiz shows were hugely popular on TV at the time. They, you know, put modern Jeopardy to shame. It was a big deal. And Charles Van Doren and a few other contestants had these incredible streaks where they won a whole bunch of money. They were on the show for weeks and weeks on end, and became kind of national sensations in the way that, you know, Ken Jennings did or James Holzhauer did, perhaps even more so, front page news, really. And it came out that, in fact, it was not totally honest, that the shows were actually scripting these things. So they were helping the players, including Van Doren, prepare ahead of time, kind of giving them a peek at the material. They were in some cases asking their opponents to basically throw games and paying them to do so. And when it came out, it really was this incredible scandal. I mean, the audiences were so enthralled by their runs, and then it just turned out to all be totally made up. So it became such a big thing that there were congressional hearings, and they were charged with perjury. And in fact, Congress amended the Communications Act, and it is now, has ever since, been a federal law, basically, that dictates the sanctity of quiz shows. So, you know, to cheat on a quiz show, to help a contestant cheat on a quiz show is illegal now. So the word Jeopardy comes into this is, in the years immediately after that, there, of course, was this kind of fallout in that audiences didn't really trust these shows. That, you know, how do they know that nobody's cheating? Obviously, it's illegal, but okay. And Merv Griffin, the creator of Jeopardy, was talking with his wife about this and saying, you know, he'd love to create a quiz show, but it was such a tough business right then. Nobody really wanted to do it. So she came up with this idea to basically do exactly what is now illegal, which was to just hand over the answers, which is, of course, this iconic Jeopardy format of, you know, the host reads the answer to it, and you have to guess the question, the what is, who is. So Jeopardy, of course, did that, immediately took off, and it's been that way ever since. But it was this, you know, really just fundamental nose thumbing at the 1950s quiz show scandals from the very beginning of Jeopardy.
Yeah, so the show's been around for 30 plus years. I've been watching it since I was a young man. And for many years, I just thought that these contestants had that information in their head, that this is just stuff that they knew. And so, you know, what we've learned is that they're given the materials. Are they given the categories and
they're not given the material.
Oh, they're not.
That is, yeah, no, this is actually a popular myth about Jeopardy. Okay. That they are kind of given a study guide.
So
and in fact, that would be illegal.
Break that down for us. So how are they preparing for this?
Yeah, so one of the things I wanted to capture in the book is the way contestants prepare has really changed over the last 5 or 10 years. It used to be, you know, we're now in the 37th year of this current edition of Jeopardy. It used to be that in, you know, the early years of that, even a decade ago, if you were preparing for Jeopardy, and most contestants have about 4 weeks between getting the call, inviting them on, and when they actually have to be in LA to tape their episode, you know, maybe you'd pick up an almanac, maybe you'd make some flashcards from presidents, vice presidents, Shakespearean plays, you know, and then you were like, okay, good, you know, I'm done, I'm ready. It has become this really serious, dedicated thing, and specifically with the subject matter. So as I just said, contestants are not briefed in any way. They have absolutely no idea what they will be seeing in a given game. It's really the same experience as turning on the ninth episode. You have no idea what those categories will be. That's the case for the contestants on the stage as well. Hmm. But for people preparing to go on it, a lot of them, you know, kind of, many study even before they get the call to go on Jeopardy. For a lot of Jeopardy contestants, it is a lifelong dream, a lifelong goal, but it's really hard to get on Jeopardy. About 100,000 people have taken the online contestant test to try out for a spot just this year. Mm-hmm. And about 2,500 of those will have auditions over Zoom this year. And only about 400 people each year are invited on as new contestants. So it becomes this lifelong pursuit. And even really great contestants, very sharp players, like James Holzhauer, he took the contestant test for 13 years before he was actually invited onto the show. Yeah, I mean, a lot, it varies by contestant, but a lot of them have done things where they basically downloaded the entire history of Jeopardy, these 37 wow. seasons of it, and gone over clue by clue, figured out specific areas to study, you know, used really a lot of like very complicated computer science sort of methods and math okay. methods to determine exactly what to do. So there's just so much preparation that happens. And I mean, you know, they do the same with the buzzer. The buzzer has become a huge part of the gameplay. Mm-hmm. So it's really gotten very serious.
Wow. Yeah. There are certain categories that I do very well in like anything around.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think I was surprised once when they did the Harlem Renaissance. I did pretty well with that. And most things within popular culture, outside of that, I'm pretty much an idiot. But would you say that the show was made by, in terms of its success, by Alex Trebek? And if so, tell us a little bit about Alex Trebek, going beyond, you know, sort of where he's from, where he's grown up, but who was Alex Trebek?
Yeah, I mean, and that has been one of the toughest things of the last week and change, where it's just tough to use the past tense because he feels like this monolithic figure where he's just permanent. He's been doing it forever. The thing that really blew me away from my conversations with him was really just that he was so much who he seemed to be on the show. He really was this smart, sharp, kind of self-deprecating, funny figure where he really cared about the trivia. He really believed that all those silly, obscure facts were important. He thought you should know about Mark Twain and you should know about the, you know, international capitals and the order of the English kings. And he cared about this. And I was able to talk to a whole lot of contestants over the course of writing the book. And one of the funny things that I learned was that when you watch Jeopardy at the end of an episode, you can see Trebek approaching the contestant lecterns, and he shakes the champion's hand and he's kind of talking with them for a few minutes, but you can't hear what he's saying. And in fact, what I learned is that more often than not, what he was doing in those closing moments was he was just talking about Final Jeopardy. If he thought it was a really hard Final Jeopardy clue, he was like, wow, you know, how did you work that out? What brought you there? Like, did you figure out this part of the clue? Or worse, if a player missed it and of course is just heartbroken because they've just lost on Jeopardy, he'd be like, oh, come on, you knew that. Like, don't you remember seeing this in the news last year? Like, he really cared about it. And I think that you could tell to some degree. I mean, he really did walk the walk.
Did he make the show, or did the show make him? Did he bring that sort of nerdiness to the show and make that the sort of the nerds quiz show, or did his working in the show sort of mold him into that the years after? Do we know?
Yeah. Ooh, that is really a chicken and egg question, I feel like. So, I mean, he had hosted a lot of game shows before Jeopardy, and he had kind of finessed, to some degree, that character, though, of course, he did some really silly ones. He did, you know, Double Dare and all these, where it was a little bit zanier, and he would wear a silly outfit, not this very staid, like, suit and tie. But I think that he was always that to some degree. I mean, he was a philosophy major in college. His early professional background was as a newscaster with the CBC. And he kind of grazed amongst categories that way. I mean, they weren't categories, of course, but parts of the academic world. So I think to some degree it was luck. I mean, it was really the right guy for the right show. But actually the first host of Jeopardy, Art Fleming, who hosted in the 60s and 70s, very much was not that character. He was this very affable, chummy guy who was very humble about it and kind of would joke about the fact that he had no idea what any of the answers were, and he was just glad he had the sheet in front of him. So, you know, and that show was a hit as well. So we've seen two different versions work very well.
Yeah, I think many of us forget that there was a host before Alex Trebek. Mm-hmm. And you write a lot about, you know, what he brought to that and that enthusiasm that he brought, everything from making sure in his own way that people were pronouncing things correctly. one of those jokes that just became a meme.
It's one of the great joys of watching the show, right? Where he kind of like lays into contestants. But he had such a great sense of, you know, who was willing to do that and who kind of got that it was a joke. And I've talked to some of those contestants who had those like viral moments, like Alex Trebek owns contestant.
Yeah.
And you know, for them, it was almost always just this incredible highlight to kind of get ribbed by Alex Trebek.
In chapter five, you talk about, it focuses on Jeopardy and pop culture. The show's been around for 30 plus years, so it's no question that it's seeped into and become a part of a popular American culture. But I would say more so than most other game shows. Wouldn't you say that if you look at from it just being portrayed on Saturday Night Live with Celebrity Jeopardy and Black Jeopardy, the theme song itself, people will bring up in any number of situations in their life when they're sort of counting down on something. It really has become a part of American culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that wasn't in large part due to Trebek. Mm-hmm. I think that he did so many cameos in so many different kind of corners of television and film. He liked to tell the story of his cameo on Cheers, which is of course this famous episode where, you know, one of the characters from Cheers goes on Jeopardy and face plants, and he kind of makes fun of them. Pulling a Cliff Clavin has become this term for doing that on Jeopardy since then. But he told this story about how when he was first called in for that cameo, he went onto the set and delivered the pretty limited lines they'd written for him. And they thought he did a really good job. And they were, you know, kind of pleasantly surprised. Wow, Alex Trebek can kind of, you know, play this character. Like, okay. And he comes back the next day and they've added more lines for him. And he comes back the day after that and they've added more lines. So I think, you know, it had a lot to do with the universality of Jeopardy, but also he was just really good at it. And he was so willing to have fun with his persona and fun with the idea of Jeopardy. And I think that like facilitated all these crazy cameos from the X-Files to Saturday Night Live, which of course was mostly Will Ferrell, but he actually did appear on, and you know, Golden Girls.
Golden Girls, yeah.
And just all these other shows.
Yeah. So we had Ken Jennings, 74 straight wins, was the longest in history. Does that still hold true?
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the show turn some average Americans into kind of celebrities, right? So who are some of the other more memorable guests or participants?
Yeah, I mean, that is another one of the beauties of the game is kind of the fun of playing it from your couch is also like, well, when you really nail a category, you're like, you know what, maybe I could do this. Maybe I could win on Jeopardy. I could be a champion. and of course, it's very difficult to get there and very difficult to actually win once you are.
Mm-hmm.
But there are these people who've kind of become celebrities. That's especially since they've got rid of that 5-day limit and opened the door to these mega champions like Ken Jennings or like James Holzhauer, who won 32 games last year, which is the second longest streak in the show's history. But there were, you know, even in the kind of earlier days when they capped people at 5 games, there were people like Frank Spangenberg, the NYPD officer, who able to speak with.
You write about him in the book, yeah.
Yeah. and, you know, it is such a zeitgeisty show where he was on like Letterman, I think, after he won on Jeopardy. And people love that. People love the idea of characters coming out of this quiz show. Mm-hmm.
We like brainy people, I guess.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's just so pure. It's so wholesome. And the format hasn't changed, right? It's the same game that it's always been. And
so
just has its currency.
In the book or in any of your reporting, when Ken Jennings went on that 74 straight win, were there any whispers of this could be a fixed kind of thing?
I don't think any that went anywhere because, one, because when you watch him play, he is incredible. Like, you talk to him for 2 minutes and you're like, okay, no, he's got the goods. Like, there's no uncertainty there. And of course I'm biased because he wrote my foreword.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
He really is, you know, very brilliant. It is not surprising once you've met him.
Mm-hmm.
But also a kind of weird part of being on the Jeopardy set is how seriously they take this like there's the legality of it because it is such a big deal. So they have a lawyer sitting just off stage for every single game, sort of enforcing this wall between the people who've read the material and the people who haven't. And you know, even Alex Trebek kind of keeps himself at a distance from contestants or had anyway, because he's seen the games, like he's read through all the games. And I don't think you can spend time on that set and see what like kind of a, like religious fervor they have for this. And of course it's a matter of the law, but funny business.
So before I let you go, there is now a recent calling for LeVar Burton to take over as the host. You also write that Trebek, when asked about who should succeed him, once said Betty White. Do you have thoughts on where the show should go from here?
Yeah, I mean, LeVar Burton has long been a fan favorite, for people kind of considering Jeopardy after Trebek. And of course, it's hard to imagine anybody else doing it. But he is a similar figure in that he is beloved in sort of the same way that Trebek was. And of course, because he has that Reading Rainbow background, he has both the nostalgia, but also the sort of like academic sense to him. Like, you believe that he could kind of be that authoritative scholarly figure. Ken Jennings, of course, is also mentioned a lot, and beginning this season, actually, you know, went in-house at Jeopardy, and is like a consulting producer over there. But I think that, you know, whoever it is, the show is very aware of the fundamental beauty of Trebek's performance as host. And there will never be another Trebek, and I think that they know that better than anybody. But just, you know, you need somebody who you do believe cares about the game and does care about all those facts, even if they don't necessarily know them themselves, and but who also has that humor. Like, I think that was, as much as Jeopardy is this very staid game and nobody wants it to turn into like a variety hour, and like, there's not really room for it in the Jeopardy format, Trebek getting in those little barbs, those little twists of the knife, those little jokes was such a precious part of Jeopardy. And I think that they know that. And we will see those things in whoever the next host is.
Yeah. Well, Claire McNair, author of Answers in the Form of Questions, A Definitive History and Insider's Guide to Jeopardy. Thank you very much for stopping by and talking with us on Zoom about your book and the recent loss of one of the great hosts in game show history, Alex Trebek. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
As one of the longest-running hosts of a game show, Alex Trebek popularized intelligence and brought out the inner nerd in all of us. He will be missed. Pop Life is a product of WAER Syracuse Public Media. Our producer is Kevin Kloss. I'm Joe Lee. Thanks for listening.